What's up, everybody? My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you are tuned in to Kinda Neat. Thank you for tuning in, as always. You know the drill. If you are a weekly listener and you haven't done it yet, go to patreon.com/kindaneat. Just read about it a little bit. It's a pledge system where you can pledge a buck or two or three, whatever you want to pledge, for every episode. So every time we put out a podcast, you just give us a dollar for our work, because we drive far to do it. We love what we do, and we love that you guys like what we do. And if you feel like donating or pledging, please do. It'd be tight. Patreon, patreon.com/kindaneat. Today is the day to activate and go do that. Today, man, had such a cool fucking time with Kayflay. She's a great person. You guys have been requesting her pretty much since the podcast started. And actually, even back in 2011 when we were doing the Knock City shit, I would have loved to have her on back then. Just never really crossed paths. And then randomly, shout out to Clayton Blaha, who we had on as a guest at one point. He just randomly texted me out of the blue and was like, "Hey, would you be interested in having Kayflay on?" I said, "Fuck yeah, I would be interested in having Kayflay on. She's tight." He facilitated that, and here we are. We did an episode with her, and I couldn't have been happier. She's just the most polite and well-spoken and nice person, and so, like, just, I don't know, she's very smart. That's pretty much the takeaway from my conversation, is that she's, like, smart. She's smart as a whip. There's one point in the conversation where, like, she's trying to make a point and says something about, like, you know, "Where should we go eat?" And my brain instantly went to tacos, and it just got me thinking. I have, like, a borderline unhealthy obsession with tacos right now. Like, it's pretty much all that I'm ever wanting to eat. And even my Twitter timeline is starting to reflect that, because the other night I like posted a picture of this taco spot I was eating at. And then the next day I was thinking about how, as a kid, I definitely preferred burritos over tacos. And now if I go to a Mexican place, I'm not getting a goddamn burrito. I'm definitely getting some tacos. There's something about the simplicity of just a little bit of meat, some cilantro and onion and a salsa perhaps on a tiny little corn tortilla, that is so perfect and so beautiful. And if you just eat it simplistically that way, you get to just taste the how the meat is slow cooked and all the flavor that's been embedded into it. And it's such a glorious meal. I've been outright obsessed. I'm eating tacos probably about 5 days a week right now. I'm hoping that the habit will kind of like subside in a little bit. And I don't know why the obsession is currently taking place. Actually, I think I can blame it on, I follow this publication, LA Eater, on like Facebook and Twitter and shit. And so that's kind of regional. Like, it's an LA thing. So if you're not in LA, sorry. But they post about all these new restaurants. And so, like, the other day they posted about some new deli that opened by my house in Culver City called Cannibal. So I went and checked it out. It was good. It was overpriced, but it was good. They also had like little trinkets in there. One of them was like a drink mixture thing. It was like a kit to make two old fashions that came with just like aromatic bitters and cane sugar and a muddling spoon. And it was $26. I'm like, you guys are fucking tripping on that one. No offense, Cannibal. Your sandwich was good. The meats there do look delightful. But yeah, LA Eater put out this like 18 tacos that you have to try in LA. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to make this my fucking mission to eat all these goddamn tacos. And so one of them that I had been meaning to try forever anyway, because I always drive by it, is on the corner of La Brea and Venice. It's called Tacos Leo, or Leo's Tacos. And it's just a truck that's in like an abandoned Chevron station. They're parked there every day. And if you live in LA and you've driven by, they're open till 3 a.m. You'll recognize it, because it's the spot that has two like giant Al Pastor spits just roasting all day. Just huge fire with meat spinning around and a pineapple on top. And the guys who cut the meat off of the Al Pastor spit are like such pros. They carve a little bit out, catch it into the tortilla, and then chunk or like just hack off a little chunk of pineapple and it flings into the tortilla and they catch it that way, like almost like a no look pass. It's like it's really something to watch. There's a certain artistry to it, most definitely. And I had been meaning to try that place forever, and it was like number three on that list. And so I finally went there. It's a cash only spot. So there are a lot of places in LA that are cash only where I just like always try to save a couple bucks in my wallet because I don't carry around a lot of cash. But whenever I do have cash in my wallet, I'm like, okay, cool. I can go to fucking Leo's, or I can go to Tito's, or I can go, you know, S&W Diner, wherever it only takes cash. And so I went and tried it, and oh my God. These al pastor tacos, oh my God. You never tasted anything like it. So fucking good. And their salsas are good. And oh man, they have like pickled onions that are, but not like the kind that you usually find in a taqueria. It almost looks more like a sauerkraut or something. Put those on there with some onion and cilantro, a little bit of salsa with the al pastor and that chunk of pineapple. Jesus fucking Christ. I might have to stop by on my way home. It's so good. And so, yeah. And then I don't know if I mentioned this, but a Kogi restaurant opened by my apartment as well, like damn near walking distance. It's like about probably three city blocks from my apartment. And I think it's their first like brick and mortar restaurant. I could be totally mistaken about that. But Kogi was – I talked about it briefly with Bobby on the last episode. It's Roy Choi's like food truck where he mixed Korean meats and Korean flavors with his Mexican influence and tacos and stuff. And so that place is something too that's going to be real bad that it's so close to my house, because I will be eating a lot of spiced pork tacos from there. And their chicken taco is amazing as well, very spicy. And so point is, I've just been kind of like on a run, like exploring the city, trying to eat some tacos. I think also that Jonathan Gold documentary that I was telling you guys about a few episodes back kind of inspired it too. I don't know. I fucking love LA. I love LA so much. I love the food here, and I love some motherfucking tacos. You could tell I did have. We just recorded an episode 2 days ago or 3 days ago, and now we're recording another one. So nothing like momentous happened in my life in those last 2 days. And so I was like, you know what? I'm just going to talk about tacos. Yeah, man. Appreciate the food that your city has. Whatever immigrant subculture your particular city has, go delve into their cuisine, because goddamn, it's probably so good. Anyway, I don't need to give you guys any more mouthwatering details about tacos. But if you're in LA and you've never been to Tacos Leo, go. Kayflay, man, I feel like after this conversation, I would just want her to be my best friend. She's like so cool. And so, yeah, listen in, have a good time. Her new music, she was playing us some of it. Jesus Christ, it's fucking great. Super talented. And I'm just looking forward. I think big things are going to happen to her within the next few months. So all praises due. Here is my conversation without further ado with Kayflay. Are you someone that always has to be moving forward, goal-oriented?
You know, I definitely am goal-oriented, but I am making an effort, or I think maybe consistently throughout my life, I have enjoyed things that suspend me within moments. Like, we were talking about books earlier. Yeah. I think that's a big part of why I like to read, is because it's not like meditation in the sense that your brain isn't, you know, like a glass kind of filter. But it's a focused endeavor that sort of separates you from time and space in a lot of ways. And I think that's like – I enjoy that.
Can kind of separate you from your distractions for a bit.
Yeah, and just from your reality, you know. And I think I enjoy that. But otherwise, I'm pretty – you know, I'm not reversing out the driveway too often. So
what does that mean?
I don't know. I'm going forward.
Yeah.
I'm driving through the neighbor's fence.
Your neighbors hate you. That's terrible. You should leave their fence alone.
Got a lot of lawsuits pending.
Right. Yeah. You're like a young go-getter.
Kinda.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm getting.
Are you a workaholic?
Going. Yes, I am. I think. But I also enjoy my work and find it to be like also a social thing. You know, so it's hard to. I feel like it's hard to disentangle when you do creative work, because
Because you love it, too. So yeah. It's like workaholism can also be like loveaholic.
Yeah. It's kind of like, I mean, I don't have any children, luckily yet. But I feel like it's almost the way that you would feel about your children. You know, like I have a few friends now who just starting to have kids. And it's like spending time with them, they just want to do it all the time, mm-hmm. you know, and however that manifests. So I kind of feel that same way about music.
Mm-hmm. So every song is your baby.
Yeah. I mean, I regret some of those babies.
Do you?
Well, I don't regret them, but I mean, you know what I mean.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like a relic.
Do you find that some of the songs that you hate the most tend to be the ones that the fans love the most?
No.
No?
Actually.
Oh, so you have similar taste as your fans then?
Seemingly.
That's good.
Most of the stuff that I don't love is just like mega, mega old.
Yeah.
Or I don't love it because I didn't sort of know how to control my voice yet,
right.
Or know how to like perform or sing or anything.
Well, one of the things that I preach on here heavily is that it takes young artists a long time to find not only their literal voice, but also their figurative voice, but like really the literal voice, like using it as a tool and a melodic weapon, takes forever.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it took me, I just think I was totally unaware that that was something that could be done or
right.
that people did.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, once I figured that out, that really helped.
Yeah.
Because
let's face it, us whites, we don't really have natural rap voices. You got to learn it.
No. And I think, you know, there's, for me too, a big part of it was sort of existing between singing and speaking.
Right.
And moving back and forth, because I've been doing a lot more kind of melodic stuff in the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a whole, like, you know, new thing for me to understand, because I was pretty new to that as a method of expressing and using my voice.
Mm-hmm. This has been very technical so far.
I know. Oof.
Yeah. Where are you from? Because I've been avoiding asking you that since we've been talking, because I figured, like, I want to ask you where you're from.
Okay, so I'm from... I know, I thought you were so rude. Just kidding. You weren't rude at all. You've been very polite. This whole interaction has been very polite, as we've discussed.
Now we've both accused each other of politeness.
Okay, so I am from, I was born in a town called Evanston, Illinois.
Okay.
And then which is about 25, 30 minutes north of Chicago.
Right.
And then I grew up primarily in Wilmette, Illinois, which is, kind of the next town north. That's where my mom and my stepdad lived, and then my dad kind of lived in another place, a little bit like 30 minutes away, and then later moved to Indianapolis for a little bit.
Okay, so the Midwest.
But the Midwest, and definitely, like, I would say my hometown is Wilmette. But there have been many, many homes, kind of.
Many homes?
Or just a lot of moving.
You guys jumped around a lot.
Moving in the blood.
Why?
Well, you know, it's interesting too now, because my adult life has been a life of transience, and I feel that my young life has prepared me well, or maybe just got me used to it. But
or maybe your adult life is a reflection of your youth, because your adult life is seeking the themes that were already set up in your youth. You know what I mean? You're the psychologist here.
I do. No, I think it's true. I mean, I think it's a mix of I'm definitely comfortable with that sense of, you know, I remember meeting kids in college, especially who had grown up in one house, you know, and
right.
like if their parents were moving years later or something, there was like this real sense of loss and sadness. Whereas I was just kind of like, a house is just a little place where you don't get rained on. And
right.
it's more like about the people.
Yeah.
And that's what home is more for me than physical places.
Well, so why were you guys moving around so much? Was there like chaos in the home life?
I wouldn't call it chaos, but
yeah, that was an extreme.
I mean, I don't know. I think for my dad, he was internally dealing with chaos, but, so my mother and my father, got divorced when I was six.
Are you an only child?
So I'm biologically an only child.
Yeah.
But so my mom ended up marrying Tom, who is my stepdad.
Shout out, Tom.
Shout out to Tom. Tom is honestly one of the greatest. And this is verified. I was, in fact, having this conversation yesterday. Like, one of the best people ever, truly. Like, I feel so, so lucky because—
You said that's verified? Like, he's Twitter verified?
Like, he's Twitter verified. One of the greatest person ever. But no, yesterday I was talking to I was with a couple of friends of mine.
Yeah.
And he came up and they were like, yeah, Tom's like the best. They're like, seriously.
Dude, they're like, tell Tom to come grab a Newcastle with us.
Pretty much. Yeah. So yeah, my mom and my dad split up, and then my mom got married to my stepdad.
Do you remember the split up?
I do, kind of.
How was it?
Well, it was sort of weird. Like, they had only one fight that I have any recollection of. It sort of wasn't acrimonious in the big ways, but it was very, I think, sad in big ways, just because, so my dad was an alcoholic and, you know, did other bad stuff. And it was kind of like, you know, the final ultimatum. And I think once I was born, my mom felt like a real, you know, a sense of urgency.
Like, you got to clean your shit
up. Yeah. And
it becomes much realer when there's another human life involved.
Totally. I think people are very willing to, like, sacrifice their own safety and happiness. But then when you have a child or someone else that you care about, it becomes very difficult to do that.
Right.
So, yeah, so she kind of, like, you know, gave him that ultimatum, and unfortunately for everyone, or, well, not really for everyone, but kind of in a way, he was like, yeah, I'm not going to stop. And
wow.
Yeah. So, and I was, like, aware of this. So my mom kind of kept me informed. So I wasn't confused when they split up at all.
Yeah.
Which I think was really good for me, because it wasn't like, you know how you think of, like, little kids being all like, what's happening? What?
Right.
I pretty much just knew.
I always kind of say on here that, like, the cause of all issues are daddy issues. And this is a perfect example.
Yeah.
I have mine. You have yours. Have you noticed as an adult, I mean, when you break it down to brass tacks, it sounds like, oh, my dad chose booze over me. Like, how has that come back to haunt you subliminally in your adult life at all?
Well, I think not even subliminally.
Yeah, or, like, consciously.
Very consciously. I mean, I think so. What ended up happening is my mom and my stepdad got together. And so then I got a brother and a sister. And we already knew each other because we were neighbors.
Oh,
and
okay.
We were, like, friends. It was like a dream movie scenario.
Oh, so Tom had his own kids already?
Correct.
Okay.
And, like, I was in playgroup with my brother when I was, like, one.
Right.
And we were like, best friends. So when they decided to get married, we were, like, dancing around the living room, listening to Michael Jackson, hugging.
Oh, you guys are hyped. Like, you're the Brady Bunch.
Hyped yeah. as fuck. Like, yeah. just out of our minds. It was actually, like, the Brady Bunch.
That's
like,
so funny.
So, you know, on one side of things, it was really stable, really, really great. And, you know, my dad, for his part, pretty much kept it all good. But, you know, he continued to kind of deteriorate and, like, ultimately lost his job. Like, a lot of the things that happen, you know.
That you would, like, see in a movie script or
sure.
something, right.
You know, and then yeah. I think it's that, for me, what I can think about now as an adult is just that it's, like, the isolation that grows, the isolation of the addict that just seeps in to until it's just you.
Right.
You know, and I think that that's quite common across.
And it just, like, perpetuates itself and stacks upon itself until you're, like, literally all alone.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, so he ended up dying when I was 14.
Oh, sure.
Because of this. And, yeah. you know, he died alone and was dead for several days before, like, being found. And, you know, so I think, and clearly he was dealing with his own demons. I certainly don't feel related mm-hmm. to his kind of, his troubles in that realm. I think I was, like, a respite from that for him. But it was strange because, you know, he sort of died right as I was becoming, like,
those are your formative years.
A thinking person, you know, in
yeah.
certain ways. Like,
I mean, 12 to 14 are, like, your most formative years, of, like, with everything, you know?
Yeah. And so it was, I think it took me a little bit of time to try to understand him and his experience as an adult. Because I certainly
Because now you can kind of intellectualize it or, mm-hmm. or look at it as like a study, but then it's just pure emotion back then, yeah?
Definitely pure emotion. And I think for me also a real, I'm trying to think of the right word, but it created a real, I think young people already have a tendency to see things in very polarized terms.
Yeah, black and white.
And I definitely, I think that increased that for me quite a bit. So I was, and like I didn't drink, smoke, do anything until I was 23.
Yeah.
And I had very strong feelings about it, which, you know, stemmed from him. And I think I just had a mentality that, you know, drinking or using any kind of substance was a sign of weakness and a disappointment and a source of shame and like all these kinds of things, which it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of my kind of adult life, you know, like post-college life has been thinking about that and thinking about how, I don't know, just like I think drinking for me, just even understanding that feeling helped me to connect with my dad and just at least understand like, oh, so this is what you were doing, you know, right. Or like, this is what was going on.
Right, right.
Which has been kind of a cool, it's almost like quasi-religious.
Wow.
It's weird.
I mean, what a realization, or what a way to like kind of mend your internal relationship with your dad, like.
Yeah.
Right?
I think, I was, as many people are, immediately following someone's death, that's like sudden and, you know, kind of under semi-bad circumstances. You know, there was a lot of anger. I was very...
Because that's your secondary emotion. That's your cover from the sadness, from the void. You just cover it with anger.
Yeah, and I think it wasn't until maybe I was like 23, 24, like, and was kind of just like really like living on my own out of college and starting to reimagine even my relationship to things that I began to have a different kind of compassion for him, I guess is a way to put it.
Were you already writing at that point and creating music?
So yeah, I started making music in college.
And so when you say you're like 23, 24 and begin to work through things, are you working through that in a very like, are you working through that with your art or is it more just on personal time?
Partially. Yeah. I think it mixed together. And certainly as time has gone on, he figures kind of prominently almost as a like narrative just presence in a lot of what I write and do.
Yeah.
Because I think that even though his death like isn't a mystery to me, I understand what happened and I think I kind of know why on some level, it is still the ultimate mystery to me.
Right.
And just that there's so many questions that go unanswered. And so he's kind of like serves this oddly mythical like role in my life.
Yeah.
One that I find pretty interesting to explore musically.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, I don't know, like a good ghost or something.
Right, right.
Like Casper.
No, I get it. Do you find that ultimate question of like, why didn't you save yourself for me? Do you find it affecting adult relationships?
I don't.
No.
Because I really see what was happening with my dad as, and I think this is, you know, true for people who struggle with addiction across the board, is that it's so much an internal thing. I mean, you can have a beautiful family and great opportunities and tremendous, you know, potential as a human being, and all of that is sort of pushed to the side in the face of whatever like void is sort of being filled. And so, yeah, I don't think so. And I really do credit like my mom and my stepdad, Tom.
Yeah.
And Tom actually adopted me. So Tom is like...
Tom's
a G.
You don't have to call him a stepfather. I'm already like, Tom's my bro.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I feel very, very lucky that on the flip side of having, you know, that side of chaos in my life, incredible stability and support. And my brother and sister and I, you know, are super, super tight. My brother actually just got married.
Oh, shout out to your brother and his
shout
wife.
Out to Andy. I just was talking to him earlier today. That was in March.
My brother's getting married in June, next month.
Aw.
I'm going back home. I'm the best man.
You're going to Alaska. You're going to be the best man.
Yeah, I'm the best man.
Ah.
I'll tell you what, I read a hell of a speech.
I was going to say.
I read a hell of a speech. Did you, when dad leaves when you're six, did you have to like spend time between both households? Like, were you going to see him?
Well, so actually my dad, who was quite a intransigent man in general, didn't leave. So my mom and I left.
I just want to say props to your vocab. You've already used a couple words where I'm just like, yo, oh, you must kill it at Scrabble. Acrimonious and intransigent.
Well, I have a real
You have a love of words. It's
I just think it's so cool how in a language, like, and I'll never have this in another language because, well, I shouldn't say never, but it's like doubtful as to whether I will have this with another language. But just an understanding of like the minor nuance of words, like that if you're looking in it, like if we looked at a thesaurus, right, for the word like excited and we saw all the different options, like they all don't mean excited.
Right.
You know,
totally.
Exactly. And it's so, I find that like so cool.
Right.
Anyway.
Because excited, turned on can be excited, but also ecstatic can be excited. And those are two completely different things. You know what I mean?
Completely.
Yeah.
So words are really cool. Also, fun fact.
Yes.
And this like boggles my mind to this day. Have you ever read Lolita?
I've not.
Okay.
I've seen one of the movies, I think.
Okay. Well, you should read it.
Okay.
Just because, like, it's part of the canon and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And, but the craziest part of it is that, like, whether or not you find the subject matter grotesque, which I hope you do, you psychos out there, if you don't.
I do.
Okay, that was a test.
Yeah.
Regardless of, like, the actual content of the book, you know, it's regarded as, by many, many people, as one of the best, like, top 10 English language
literary classic.
Novels, right?
Right,
okay,
yeah.
So here's the catch,
yeah.
Is that it was written by a Russian man.
I think I knew that.
Who English was a second language, and he wrote it in English.
Right.
Can you imagine if you moved to, like, Brazil, and you wrote one of the best
Portuguese
novels ever?
Well, joke's on you. I already did that. No, I'm just kidding.
God, I feel like an asshole.
I am on the Sao Paulo bestsellers list 28 weeks in running.
Okay, that would be
okay.
Incredible.
Wait, so intransigent, your father. So he was skipping. Okay. He was skipping around a lot. He was probably having problems holding down a household, or what?
Well, no. I'm saying that my dad wouldn't leave where we lived.
Oh, wouldn't leave.
So
okay.
My mom and I left.
Oh.
And then we were kind of bouncing around. So we live with my aunt and uncle for a bit, who are awesome, and my cousin.
Yeah.
And also with my mom's friend Gail and a few other just like homies helping out.
Wait, is your
out.
Mom Oprah? She has a friend Gail?
And is from Chicago.
Oh, my God.
My mom is not Oprah.
Oh, what a,
despite the striking resemblance.
Down.
I know. So we did that for a little bit. And then ultimately, you know, my mom and Tom got together, blah, blah, blah.
What did your mom do for work?
So my mom was a lawyer. My father was also a lawyer. My brother's a lawyer.
You got a lot of law in your family.
That's right.
What does Tom do? Is he a lawyer?
Tom is a doctor.
Wow. You come from very strong influences.
Very, very strong. A lot of work ethic, and like I grew up at the type of dinner table, and this was true with my father as well.
Yeah.
Like you need to know what's happening in the news. You should have an opinion about it. You've done your homework, because why would we even need to tell you? Because you're motivated to learn. Like that
I
type
love that.
Of, which was such a great way to grow.
Yeah, I love that.
Best way. I think about how much I love to learn to this day. Like, and how much, and how that was like so firmly established. And I do credit my dad so much too, because like whatever his internal life, a little bit gnarly, but the way he treated me and raised me and all that, so awesome.
Was like, you better learn your shit.
Well, and just not even you better. It was like, why would
you
not want to?
Right.
Like, look at this world we live in.
Yeah, they created a lifelong learner because it was like such an academic atmosphere.
Totally.
Yeah.
And like a love of just like books and math and all that stuff.
So is your mom the type that's like, oh, am I allowed to say Christine?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Say Christine.
When Christine was only a year and a half, she was already talking like an adult. Because that's what my mom does.
Yeah, I think that that mythology about me centers on reading.
Oh, yes. Like, oh, same too.
Yeah.
Like reading by age three.
Actually, my mom claims that my first word was bullion.
Wow. Gold bullion.
Yeah. Or like chicken bullion.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Both bullions.
Those are bullions.
Two bullion.
That thesaurus shit, you know what I mean?
That'll be our rap supergroup. Two bullions.
Two bullion. Full of bullions.
What's up? What's up? We're full of bullions. We're from Fairbanks.
I think my first word was balloon.
Whoa. Yeah. You're really similar.
I didn't even think of that.
That's
bullion and balloon.
Terrifying.
Well, because she had a bunch of hot air balloons hanging in my room for some reason. My mom did.
Okay.
And so my first word was balloon. And soon thereafter, I think it was bullshit because of my grandmother. So she likes to cuss.
Yeah, I think that's good for kids to learn.
My mom always tells this story about how when I was a little kid, people would ask me what I wanted to be when I grew up, and I would say an archaeologist. Wow. What would you tell people?
I don't know. That's weird to say, and it kind of comes up sometimes in interview stuff randomly. Like, if you weren't doing this, like, what would you be doing? And I'm like,
oh, I would never ask that shitty
disturbed.
Question.
I know you wouldn't, and it is a fucking shitty question. It's like the equivalent to me of asking someone, well, if you didn't wear that today, what would you have worn?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know, some other fucking outfit.
Right.
I would have gotten dressed.
Right.
Somehow I would exist in the world. I don't know.
Right.
Anyway.
What do your parents think of the fact that you became a creative?
They love it.
They do?
Yeah. And my dad was musical.
It sounds like you have a very supportive family base.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. I really feel tremendously lucky for that. But my dad like taught me to play guitar when I was a little kid and like super. And he and my uncle like back in the 70s used to like make tapes, write songs and stuff. So I think everyone feels, and myself included, feels kind of happy that there's like – that his spirit has carried on in such a positive way in me, you know? So everyone's really always been totally supportive and has maintained the attitude of like, if you're working hard and you feel fulfilled and you're able to take care of yourself and you're treating other people like with compassion and kindness and experiencing life to the extent that you want to, then, you know.
That's dope.
We're here for you, which is...
I want your family.
Yeah,
your family sounds tight.
Honestly, you're always welcome. Like,
hey, don't threaten me with a good time. I'll be over there for Thanksgiving.
It's actually, we had a crazy this past Thanksgiving. I had a show in Chicago. So my mom and Tom ended up moving to Oakland.
Yeah.
A while back, but you know, everyone's originally from Chicago. My brother-in-law lives in New York. My sister's in DC, and so I had a show in Chicago. November 25th of this last year.
Day after Thanksgiving.
This year, the day before.
Before. Okay, you're right.
It always changes. Yeah, so like the date is irrelevant. It's the Thursday that matters.
Right.
So we had to show at House of Blues and everyone came in. And I was also with my touring family.
Yeah.
And it was my guitarist's birthday on the 26th. It's my mom's birthday on the 26th. It was Thanksgiving, and it was the first Thanksgiving we had all been together. It was like my brother, his then fiance, now wife, my sister, her boyfriend, like my aunt, uncle, cousin, everybody. And it was like so beautiful.
That sounds great.
You would have been invited, is the point.
Where'd you guys go? Denny's?
No.
Where do you go when you're all traveling? You have family in Chicago still.
Exactly. Yeah. We were at my aunt and uncle's house.
Nice.
Same aunt and uncle that we stayed with when I was young.
Yeah. Gail.
Chucky
no,
and Debbie.
Not Gail.
No. Gail's okay. A friend.
Did Gail come though?
I can't believe I'm shouting out my entire. This is like a real family episode, but
we love shout outs on.
You know, my mom and Tom will be listening to this.
Shout out mom and Tom.
So anyway, shout out.
Yeah. Today I got a tweet from somebody today that said, from listening to Kinda Neat, now every time someone's name comes up in a conversation, I just say shout out to that name. And I'm like, cool, we finally have like a thing on the show. That's great.
That's a pretty cool thing.
My grandmother also has begun on Facebook always saying shout out like for no reason. She'll just be like, shout out the beautiful weather today.
I'm
like, she's definitely listening to the podcast.
That's really cute.
It's funny.
A grandma saying shout out.
She says shout out a lot. It's funny. Okay, so being that you're like really intelligent, that's very clear, and that you're probably a bit of an overachiever, just naturally, you probably just seem like an achiever, but compared to everyone else, an overachiever. As a youth in school, were you like Miss Perfect? Like, what was your role in the social dichotomy of your elementary school and junior high and such?
Okay, well, I went to a very large high school.
Yeah.
My sister's class was bigger than ours. I think ours was around, my graduating class, around like 1,000 kids, something like that.
My high school didn't even have 1,000 kids.
So, and that's like very true of kind of that part of the Chicago suburbs, is like it's a lot of big public schools, like just historically.
Diverse or no?
Not diverse. So, right. I mean,
because the south suburbs are more, are like the more black area, and then.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Like, so south and west, generally speaking, in Chicago is quite different. The Chicagoland area is quite different from like north and east.
Right.
And you know, that was something that went, now that like my whole family has dispersed to the coast, and especially like my parents now living in Oakland, and I went to school out there. It's just, I think the minute I got to the Bay, it was just so kind of inspiring on every level, because you know, just diversity of experience and perspective just helps you as a person. Just beyond everything else, I think it's just, it makes the way that you think about things more complex and more compelling or something.
Absolutely.
You know, and so, and that's not to knock, like, where I grew up, it's really nice, like, super safe. I went to a great, like, great schools and had really awesome teachers and all that. But I think, you know, it does suffer from that.
Lack of diversity.
Just lack of diversity of in a lot of ways, because I think, especially as a young person, if you're not confronted with that immediately and you don't choose to seek it out, or you don't end up in a situation in which you find it, it can be very limiting, you know? And
So the high school being that big, is it easy to just become a face in the crowd?
It definitely is. And so I was like a super, super serious student. And I was also... play basketball, captain of the basketball team, point guard out here.
Here we go.
But I was
you ain't
like
crossing me up. No, I'm just kidding. You probably could.
I was like, never the best at basketball, but I think I was like,
you worked the hardest. I bet
I worked hard, but I think I was like a good, had a good like role amongst people on the team, like a good
leadership ability. Yeah, and like you're probably a thinking player. Oftentimes, intelligent people who know that they don't have maybe the natural ability at it, they're able to compensate with just having the IQ of that sport. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I realized when I was 14 or 13 that people were starting to get a lot better than I was at basketball. And I was still good.
Right.
But I was like, okay, something's happening right now.
Yeah.
And I'm not gonna, that's not gonna happen for me.
You're like, why aren't I dunking yet?
Correct. So I actually played in a game where a girl dunked.
Really?
Yeah, Candace Parker. She's like now in the WNBA and stuff. She's like amazing.
You know what we're gonna say? Shout out Candace Parker.
Okay, now I'm involved in this too. But yeah, I think I had that realization early on and kind of came to terms with it. So I just enjoyed the team aspects of it.
Yeah.
Because I really do like the camaraderie. And I think team sports are, not to be like, I don't know, I feel like I'm about to give a lecture. Like,
please do.
Team sports, I do think, are very important, especially for young girls. And I'll tell you this, like when I got to college, because my whole upbringing in general was very like food and body positive. But when you play basketball or like soccer and stuff like that, it's like, okay, it's the game. We're going to eat a bunch of crap, like eat stuff, like get stronger, be like bench press more. When I was in high school, I could bench. I weighed, I think, 13 pounds. I was like young little girl.
Yeah.
I could bench press over my body weight.
Woo!
Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like that was the goal, was like be strong.
Yeah,
be.
Yeah.
And then I got to college and I started meeting girls who were like, what? You like feel good about your body and like want to be strong, not just like skinny and stuff. And I was like, whoa, that it just kind of, I don't know. It like kind of shook me. It was crazy because I felt so insulated from a lot of those. And even we were talking about Marin. Yeah. There was an episode recently.
With Nikki Glaser.
With Nikki Glaser, yeah. Exactly. Who's actually a buddy of mine.
Really?
Yeah.
They went deep into the body issues. I was like, holy shit.
I know.
And honestly, it's interesting because Marin doesn't really delve into his like eating disorder stuff too often. And he went real deep into it there.
I know. It was fascinating.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It was like, it was really like, I don't know. It was like watching from the outside, watching these two people that had like found this common bond that not very many people would share, I guess.
No, I loved it. I mean, and for me, it's almost like peeking into another world. And I've understood it more now, like, as an adult, especially being in the kind of, like, entertainment industry or whatever.
Right. Appearance is very important.
Yeah.
People put a lot of weight on it.
Yeah. No pun intended.
Oh, I didn't even.
Got you.
Damn. Me and my dad jokes, they're just natural.
I have a good one that I made up the other day. What do you call a renegade elf?
I don't know.
Rebel without a clause.
Woo!
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, that's great.
Heard it first.
I have an 8-year-old nephew who
like that?
Oh, he loves jokes. Like he's trying to, he sees me and his dad, like we'll get together and like put on a show. Like we're pretty funny when we get together. And so he recognizes the fact that people are entertained by us and he wants to be funny. So he's like, Uncle Lee, you got to buy me joke books. I want joke books. So for his birthday in January, I bought him like 2 thick ass joke books. And I'll go down there and he'll just like, all right, Uncle Lee, what do you call a cucumber that? And I'm just like, I don't know.
Aww. It's That's funny. So sweet.
But the funny thing is, I used to read joke books. I used to just go through joke books when I was his age. So I'm like stoked that.
It's the tradition.
Like, yeah, I'm like, yo, you're going to be funny because I used to read joke books too. okay, so socially.
So socially.
What was your crowd like? What crowd did you run with?
So the cool thing about being at such a big high school is it doesn't have the same kinds of like caste system, like stereotypical.
And you know what's funny is that I'm starting to think that just doesn't exist because I talk to people from small high schools like mine and that caste system doesn't exist. And then I'm hearing from you that big high schools doesn't exist. I think that's just a product of TV.
Honestly, you're probably right because it's like at my high school, if you were a cheerleader, like first of all, they couldn't even like recruit cheerleaders with money. There were like 7 girls in the entire school who were on the cheerleading squad. Yeah. Like it was like the worst thing you could ever do. So I felt like a lot of the stereotypes were inverted or non-existent. But
well, a lot of the kids that were jocks at my small school were also the valedictorian types, or like, you know, honor roll, honor society, and all that stuff.
Yeah. So I felt. I mean, my group of friends was pretty like, you know, good, like. Cared about school. I definitely cared the most. Not super athletic, just kind of like normal.
But kids. not drinkers and smokers and partiers either, obviously.
No, I mean they did a little bit. Like I would say what I would consider kind of normal, just like experimentation and stuff at that age.
Yeah, and like just butt chugging bottles of vodka and stuff. That's normal. Right?
like a couple times, like didn't get it and like did that and then like barfed in a bathroom. You know, like
did that.
But just like just because they didn't understand, right. Like in the typical way that like young kids will sometimes do that. But yeah, no one was like a big partier, definitely a low key group. And actually like,
were you a drama kid?
I wasn't.
Oh,
there's such a mystique to me about, cause one of my greatest fears is acting.
You seem like you'd be good at it.
I don't think so at all.
I don't know why. Like,
I actually profoundly believe that I would be one of the worst.
Really? Why do you think that?
I find, and I'm going to say this with the disclaimer of, I mean, no disrespect at all to any actors because I quite admire this ability. But for me personally, there's something unnameably and utterly humiliating about publicly pretending to be someone who isn't you.
Oh, shots fired. That was
I'm not even trying to say it as a mean thing.
It sounded so mean.
I didn't mean it meanly, but for me, like internally, it feels so, it's almost like the equivalent. You know how people are like, how can you get up on stage? Like, don't you feel like so naked? No. I don't feel naked as me. Mm. I would feel naked as like Juliet.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it's just the reverse.
Okay.
So maybe I should marry an actor.
Why?
I don't know.
Where did that logic jump come from?
Well, to balance
okay.
like the humiliations. to have a humiliation reciprocal so that...
You're in LA. You got a chance. They're all over the place out here.
They are. I'm in the right town.
They're all over the place out here.
Okay, well, if you're an actor and you're not an idiot...
Her number is... No. you know what else I was going to say about team sports, because we skipped right past that? Beyond the body positivity and building strong character, I think team sports... While our country does have like an exceptional addiction to team sports, and it's like almost so much emphasis put on here compared to other like European countries and stuff, like it's an insane amount of emphasis. What it does teach is like when you are starting your own business, like you have essentially becoming an artist, you have to start your own business. Working on a team as a kid teaches you how to build a team as an adult, because there has to be a team captain who's kind of pointing the way, or a coach or whatever. And you have to like build solid team players that are willing to sacrifice for each other around it. And so basketball can be very, very much analogous to business.
Hell yeah. You need a Horace Grant.
Oh man, I just watched that 30 for 30. Did you watch it?
No.
They did an Orlando Magic 30 for 30 about Shaq and Penny and Horace Grant. It's great.
Well, it's true. I mean, you need like
Steve Kerr.
Steve Kerr. And look at – actually, there's a great story about Steve Kerr. I'm just going to take a moment.
I met Steve Kerr.
Okay. So Steve Kerr – just – I'm going to do this as a like info thing for anyone listening who doesn't know who Steve Kerr is, because it seems like
– He was the shooting guard for the Bulls.
Yeah. I mean, he was like the eighth guy on the bench. You know what I mean? Like, he was not a starter.
Right.
He's a small white dude, blonde hair.
He's coaching the...
Right. Yeah, go ahead. Basically, Steve Kerr was known for shooting threes.
Right.
That's, like, what he
did. Under pressure.
Under pressure, threes. And there was this, like, key game. This was in the 90s. He made some, like, awesome, not totally last minute, but kind of, like, fourth quarter, last minute three-pointer. And then there was, like, another super actual, like, buzzer-beater type play about to happen. They go in the huddle. There's a timeout. And, like, Steve Kerr's all pumped up. And Steve Kerr is telling this story, by the way. This is in some documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, like, all pumped up and, like, so excited. And they're drawing up the play. And he says to Phil Jackson, this is the coach of the Bulls, he was like, oh, man, coach, are you going to give it to me or something? And he's like, no. We're giving it to Michael.
Yeah, right.
You know, and like, exactly. He has that great story. But, and now I think, not surprisingly, Steve Kerr is the head coach of the Golden State Warriors, who are phenomenal and has become, you know, such a, I think, a leader of a team that, again, has incredible teamwork. So you have someone like Steph Curry, who's Michael Jordan status, like superstar.
Right.
But then you have all these other dudes like Clay, who are like great and supporting cast members.
Right.
Anyway. Basketball is a shit.
What's so funny is I don't really keep up with the NBA as much as I would like to, but I was talking to my brother yesterday, and we don't relate on very many things, to be honest. We've grown up to be very different adults, but when we can find neutral ground to stand upon, we can bullshit with the best of them. And we had a fucking hour and a half conversation about the NBA and just about that, about like chemistry and about why like – you know, James Harden is unfortunately probably never going to be on a championship team now because he got moved to a team where there's no talent. And so he's a franchise player when really he should be like the third best player on any team. And you know, he would win championships if he could get on a team like that. But now his salary is going to be too high and he'll never get to do it. So it's like, man, sometimes if you're shooting only for personal gains, you're never going to fucking win a championship.
You know? Look at Allen Iverson.
Oh, I love Allen Iverson.
Right. But talk about a dude who... we don't need to get into a practice conversation.
This is getting so inside the NBA.
Yeah, we should stop. We'll go outside the NBA.
Did you watch the Allen Iverson documentary?
I did.
Yeah, that was great. I think that it's just really they just never built a team around him. I think that he could have been. I think he could have led a team. They just never gave him anybody to play with.
Totally. Sorry, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Was that without that like cast, without the team chemistry,
right.
You can have a phenomenal player like that who's just like.
You're fucked.
You know, dancing in isolation.
Yeah, totally. So, kids, if you're listening, build a team around yourself. You know what I mean?
Or
become a team player.
A team member, right.
Recognize your own abilities and get in where you fit in.
Okay. I had a conversation today related to music, but it kind of like helped me to crystallize something I've been thinking about for a little bit, which I think is also good advice for everyone out there who's listening and wants advice. Which is maybe not many people, but who want advice, but is that, and this is a good way to think about it, like if I was like, Lee, you want to go out to dinner, like what do you want?
This sounds inappropriate to me already. No, go ahead.
I go, what do you want? And you go,
tacos.
Okay, no, don't answer. Okay. So you have an opinion, but that went horribly wrong.
It will always be tacos. You're saying you decide. I'm supposed to say you decide.
You're supposed to say anything. Anything. Whatever.
I don't care.
And when you lack. And this is not a great example, but the case in which this came up was in terms of what you do as an artist or a creative person, and having awareness and self-understanding of the things that are your strengths, how you can contribute to situations, and then situations or experiences or people that you don't work well with, don't like working with, and having that perspective and awareness is one of the most helpful things and critical things to success. Like always being down for whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a misconception. Like being like, oh yeah, like I'm down for whatever.
Agreed. I always say there needs to be a voice of dissidence in the room during songwriting, because everybody can't be saying yes. Because then you end up with a 17-minute song that never fucking stops. Someone needs to go, you know what? I don't know. I don't think that's the route. I think maybe it's already done. You know what I mean? Or something like that. But yeah, definitely. I think like when, particularly in a songwriting situation or a creative situation, there needs to be somebody in the room kind of like guiding things and going like, I think we should try this. Because if everybody's going like, oh, I don't know, maybe, but we don't have to, you know, like it just gets so like everybody's trying to pitter patter around the issue.
Perspective is everything.
Totally, man. Did you graduate with like 4.5 or something?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What was your GPA? Do you remember?
I can't quite remember. It's,
was it over 4 though?
It was over 4.
Woo! You're smart. Girl, you're smart.
Well, I mean, I'm not an idiot.
Did you ace the SATs?
But I don't think, like, I think school, as I've come to understand in my adult life, like, school is something that I liked and took to the structure.
Right.
Like, I like the structure of school and did in college as well.
Right, because you can be smart as fuck and be terrible at school. Yeah. But you can also be, you know, of average intelligence, do great at school as long as you're diligent.
Exactly.
But sometimes you hit both of those kind of notes where you're, like, smart and you're good at school. I was one of those kids, too, where, like, I took to that structure. I needed it.
Yeah. There's something about it. Like, I miss that.
Yeah.
And always yeah, I feel a real affinity for
But at the same time, with what a passionate reader you are, I'm sure there's a part of you also where it's like you had this realization of like, oh, fuck, I can like teach myself whatever now. And that's a great feeling too.
It's such a great feeling.
Yeah.
Especially with music, you know, there's a lot of dead time or like in between moments and things like that. And it's easy for that to form this odd, amorphous, endless, like, checking your phone, drinking a beer, nothingness, or you can like try to capitalize and you know, like read books or do something that just sort of takes you out of that reality, and which I find helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you know, go crazy.
Yeah, totally.
So yeah.
So then you end up going to Stanford.
Yes,
that's what you told me off air.
I did tell you that off air. It's
that's
true.
That's why I knew that, audience. So. Straight out of high school, like you graduated right outside of Chicago, and then did you apply a bunch of places and that was the one you chose? Or?
Yes, correct.
Where else did you apply?
I applied, I think I applied to like 8, 9 schools, something like that, like a fair amount. Tom's side of the family is University of Michigan, go Blue Wolverines till they die.
Mm-hmm.
So I did apply there out of like, not even obligation, but just out of like a natural, like, whatever.
So
and my brother actually went to University of Michigan, and my sister went there for graduate school.
Shout out Wolverines.
Shout out Wolverines. Shout out Jim Harbaugh.
Shout out Jim Harbaugh.
Okay, that's just a double shout out. So yeah, I applied to a bunch of different places. A couple in the Midwest, Stanford and then Berkeley in California, and then like a lot of East Coast schools.
Did you already have your kind of heart set on California?
I didn't, and that's the weird thing.
You didn't? Where was your heart set on?
Well, you know, I think I don't know if I have my heart set on anything in particular, but you know, I remember my grandma was really sick when I was a senior in high school, when I was 17 and like just getting my like acceptances. So this is in April or something like that, whenever that happens. And also shout out to my grandma. First of all, this is her necklace that I'm wearing.
Yeah.
So super shout out.
I already noticed the necklace. I was like, it's a nice looking piece.
So here's an explanation. Shout out bullion. The necklace is actually, so my grandpa gave it to my grandma, and it's a calendar of September 1944 with a little diamond on September 10th, their anniversary.
Oh, that's adorable.
What a cute present.
Yeah, that is adorable.
Okay, so I'm wearing that around my neck right now for mm-hmm. for everyone to know. But so my grandma, who I called Honey.
Mm-hmm.
So my grandma Honey was like sick, and but she'd like whatever. She's a G, just like she got
a
sick.
Grandma.
She was she was a G, a grandma. that's true. Yeah, but so she was like sick, but she wasn't sick too long. She kind of had the perfect. We were talking about old age and
yeah,
all this stuff.
Yeah.
She kind of had the perfect. Like she got sick. And like 6 weeks later, died.
It went fast.
And got to see everyone yeah. and like was with fam and like
squad,
had good
and it
squad.
Was lit.
It was lit.
Right. So everyone got to say goodbye, but it didn't get to the point where she was like living in suffering.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like a little bit, a tiny bit of suffering, of course, right. but like. Anyway.
Yeah.
So the point is, right. So she was, and she didn't go to college and. Whatever, whatever. And so I remember, like, I had applied to all these schools, and I applied to Harvard, and I got in. And my grandma was, like, so proud of me. You know, because especially old, like,
yeah.
people, they don't know what that the hell's going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, but that probably wasn't even an option when she was a child, you
oh,
know?
Oh,
like,
definitely not.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I remember her being, like, so proud and just being, like, because, yeah, for her, she understood kind of, like, that was, like, a good achievement for me and stuff like that. So I think I was leaning towards that just also because it felt like
to have it
like why wouldn't you or
yeah,
some
yeah
because
that sounds amazing on it. I mean, like, how do you like them apples, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So then but then I went to visit California
yeah.
and I have a bunch of aunts and uncles who live in Oakland and stuff, so I'd been out in the Bay Area, but I went and I just like, man, I just really liked it. And I liked the California, like, well, this sounds fucking stupid, the California attitude. But there is something like...
Yo, come on, let's face it. California's fucking
California
rad.
Is so great.
California's the best.
California's the best, and...
I love it here.
It's...
I knew when I was 11 that I was going to move here. My grandmother lived up in Ventura County
mm-hmm.
in Ojai, and we used to visit her. And as an 11-year-old, I was like, this is it. I'm moving here. I'll cry when we had to fly back to Alaska. Like, I don't let me go to school here. You know, this is it's a great state.
It is a great state.
And so I can imagine as like a, you know, sprightly 18-year-old, you go to the Bay, you ghost ride the whip a little bit, you shake them dreads, and you're just like, yeah, yeah, you've arrived.
Essentially. No. I mean, essentially that's what happened. Like, I came and then I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
And then actually, this is like, I've never even told the story largely because I forgot it, but.
Exclusive.
This is a Missy exclusive. Just remember the album had that every song. The dude who I'd interviewed with for Harvard called me up, like, I don't know, me making the decision or something, and was like, so are you set? Are you deciding? And I was like, well, you know, I went and visited Stanford and spent some time there, and I really liked it. And he was like, why would you ever
choose Stanford?
Yeah. Or something
Holy
like
shit.
Really, something like
so
really
snobby.
Snobby. And I was like, and this is, by the way, no disrespect to anybody at any school. It's whatever. Like, it's all fucking bullshit in the end. But I was just like, that rubbed me the complete wrong way.
Yeah.
And and then I ended up going out to Stanford, which was such like probably the best decision of my life.
The fact that he called you, though, is better. Like, you know, the recruiters now, they just text you, you up.
You up.
They're like, you up? Like, you coming to Harvard?
Yeah,
so
I didn't get a text
yeah.
from this man.
Yeah.
I did get a call. And it really turned me off. And so.
You've probably read, like, Malcolm Gladwell stuff before, mm-hmm. Outliers and shit like that. And he talks about, I can't remember which book it was in, but he talks about the big fish in the little pond type thing, or the little fish in the big
yeah.
pond. And a lot of people where you're like this bright student at your high school, you end up going to a place like Harvard or going to MIT, and all of a sudden you're like, well, fuck, all these people are smarter than me. And then all of a sudden you feel stupid, and all of a sudden your academics drop because of that. Did you ever worry about that or experience anything like that at a school like Stanford where everyone's smart?
I didn't really. I think a part of it is a product of where I went to high school, which was, you know,
already huge,
already big. I mean, like, it was on the size of my graduating class in high school is pretty much the size of my graduating class in college, almost the same,
right.
Like a little bit different. But so it didn't feel like a huge transition.
But your high school probably had some dumbasses too, though.
100%.
Stanford, you know, everybody's like.
Stanford's got a few dumbasses. I'm going to go on record saying it. Of course, just dumbasses everywhere.
Another exclusive.
You another exclusive. Yeah.
Fuck
but,
you, Stanford.
But you know, I like, I really, really. I'm not much of a school pride person, like in a right. in a like typical sense, but I feel such a fondness and love for my time there, and a lot of the things that like that school and campus and community provided me, because I couldn't have gotten that everywhere, and I don't think I could have started making music just anywhere, and so I think it was a lot of factors coming together in this really. Beautiful way, because again, getting back to like the whole diversity, change of environment in context thing, for me, I like came out of this very, you know, predominantly white suburban area. And Palo Alto, where Stanford is located, is also right. predominantly like white and Asian and very wealthy. But right. the campus itself and the community and the kind of ethos was just very different. And then being in San Francisco and experiencing that city, and I don't know, it was just, I think it's one of the main things that allowed me to be like, oh, I could make music.
Right.
You know, because it was just like.
That doesn't seem like an option when you're in the suburbs of Chicago.
Yeah, or it was just so outside, right. yeah, like right. what I would even consider, I guess. Right. But.
Did you grow up listening to the rap music?
I did.
What was your shit?
So the thing is, like,
if I met yeah. you in high school, I wouldn't be like, oh, you know what? This is a woman I can talk about Wu-Tang with.
Well, I was also blonde. I'm blonde.
Are you blonde?
Mm-hmm. So you really couldn't have talked about any of that with me.
That's crazy.
But
I'm actually bald. You wouldn't move. Oh, no, you can tell.
I always liked a bit of more kind of like weirdo rap.
Like Anticon?
Not Anticon.
Oh, shots fired at Anticon.
No, I'm kidding. Sorry,
I'm joking.
more commercial. Weirdo. So, like, I loved Missy. I loved
ODB?
Early. Yep. I loved early Busta. I loved and still love Outkast.
E-40?
Well, so I didn't know about E-40 till I moved to the Bay.
Yeah.
But, Hustlers or Us.
Well, he, yeah.
But getting sharper than Elephant's
Tusk. That's not bad.
Me myself.
Well, see, back when I was a kid, that we had the box, and they used to play Sprinkle Me Mine. And I remember going like, man, I love this song. And my friends in Alaska go, man, I fucking hate E-40. He sucks. He's weird. And I'm like, I don't know. There's something to it, man. I kind of like it. Chino XL had a song at the same time on the box. And I remember, it was a Creep. He was like covering a Radiohead song.
Whoa.
Yeah, yeah.
I was in, fun fact about Sprinkle Me is I was in Omaha, Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out Omaha.
Yeah.
And I was at a Subway before a show.
Uh-huh.
Subway sandwich shop, not Subway yeah. public transport. And
the best cookies in the game.
Very good cookies. But mm-hmm. I was getting a sandwich. Mm-hmm. And the dude was like asking me about lettuce or something. And I was like, oh, you know, like, oh, Sprinkle Me.
Oh.
And he was like, started doing like he was like this face like all Bay Area
no
just,
way
because he was from he had lived in like yeah. I think Fremont or something and anyway so E-40's presence is palpable and diffuse
yeah wow more thesaurus words sorry yeah I just was like admiring the beauty yeah. of the English language when you talk about E-40 what other weirdos. Missy Elliott, you already said her?
Yeah. So, I mean, the main thing I liked as a kid, because I didn't listen to a ton of things, but the things I listened to a lot of. And
right.
I really, really loved Outkast. That was like kind of my biggest.
Right. What's your Outkast record?
I mean, I guess when I was young or like until I was like a little bit older, AT Aliens was pretty much just the one.
That's everything.
It is everything.
Yeah, I love that album.
Except for the fact that Stankonia still.
There's a late to the game changer for them. That was a great record.
Yeah.
Sorry, Miss Jackson.
I mean, just like the pop sensibility of all
yeah,
of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can look back and think, whoa.
Well, that was the record where like, that was the record where Andre like really stopped giving a fuck.
God, I love that.
You know? Yeah.
Dude, his verse, do you remember that White Tee song?
Yeah, probably.
Like, I don't know who sang it.
Yeah. Oh, oh, M-I-Y-T. I-T. Oh, I think they like me.
Yeah.
Think they like me. Oh, dude, I also, go ahead, tell your story.
He has a verse on that remix.
Yeah, a remix.
So, your white tee look like a nightgown.
Right, right. Your white tee, well, to me, look like a nightgown. Oh, that was on Walk It Out. That was the Walk It Out
that
remix.
That was on Walk It Out.
I actually...
The DJ Unk.
Yeah, so when I was writing... This is for the hardcore intuition fans out there. Shout out to all two of you. When I was when I was writing my second record, is the record called Girls Like Me, I had made a mix of all the Andre features. Because at that time, everybody was going like, Andre's going to make a solo album. It's coming. And I'm like, I don't know. But he was really out there doing a bunch of remixes where he would just hop on a verse. And so I made a collection of all of them. And I would just like study... Because I love Andre. Like, I want to rap like him. He's so good. Yeah. I taught a rap class one year to like impoverished kids in K-Town. And I don't know why I said impoverished. They're just like normal kids.
Yeah.
In K-Town. Kids. And one of my first assignments was like, okay, everybody fucking memorize the verse from, what's the one, the UGK song? International Players Anthem.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's like one of the best rap verses of all time. I love that rap verse. Okay, so you listen to Outkast. How do you get into music at Stanford?
I got into music because of an argument I had with a guy named Sam. And shout out Sam.
Fuck you, Sam.
No, Sam is awesome. Sam's was such, and continues to be, but is such like a... Yeah, like just was such a positive force in my life.
Oh, then I revoke my fuck you. I thought the argument was like a...
Oh, no. Basically, we were talking about... I was like in this phase, right? So I'm like, I've been in school for a little bit. I'm living in California. And I'm hearing all of this like West Coast indie rap, right? Yeah. And I'm getting exposed to that. And I'm like, whoa, this is cool. So this is like... we're talking like... 2005 or something like that.
So like Living Legends and stuff like that? Or
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
I had Grouch on. He's awesome.
Oh, he's so awesome. Cool. And one of the groups that I loved was I&I, who I ended up working with. And like actually Anthony was like a big influence for me and really helped me in a lot of ways. But so yeah, I just kind of like started getting exposed to that. And I was getting really into a lot of UK rap. I still love that Dizzy. First Dizzy Rascal record. So
Boy in the Corner?
Yeah.
Go do your homework, kids.
Yeah, please do your homework. That's a great album.
Yeah, that is a good record.
And it's so fucking weird.
Well, and it's so of the moment right now, too, because, like, you look at that influencing what Drake is doing and then with Skepta blowing up and all these people, that's, like, a seminal record in that scene.
Hell yeah. Anyhow,
I got Scrabble words, too. Girl, seminal, no, I know. You feel me?
Seminal was good. That was very good. So I was like listening to all this cool stuff.
Yeah.
And it was also around the time when like the Ying Yang Twins were really big and stuff.
To the Window to the Wall. That was a big song that year.
Yeah. And like also just like a couple things where I was like, or like the Whisper song.
Yeah.
I was just feeling like really disillusioned by what was on the radio.
I will say, I think I know what you're going to get at. And I want to say that I had a similar experience to what I think you're getting at in that. You hear these people that are locals in California making music, and then you hear what's on the radio, and you're going like, I don't like this, but you know what? I bet I could do that. I had this distinct – like I loved the Living Legends, but when I listened to the Living Legends, I also went like, I could do this. Like, you know what I mean?
Okay, so you and I had a slightly different thing.
Okay, go ahead.
Mine
was
– no, but they're equally valid.
Yeah.
I was like, this stuff on the radio is like fucking bullshit. Like. Yeah. I could write it. I'm like a white random girl who like doesn't even drink, and I could probably like write a song about like getting fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
And if like someone else sang it or performed it, it would be legitimate because it's like there's so much formulaic.
Oh, and then Sam said no, you couldn't.
Exactly.
Sam is smart. Because that's hard to do. People don't realize.
Sam is a lawyer.
Oh, shout out Sam. He's a lawyer.
Shout out Sam.
I knew.
So Sam was like, well, kind of like, all right, well, then go do it. So this other guy named Mark, who lived the floor down and was like the computer guy.
Had Acid Pro. No?
No, he had Sonar.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, very
going
rare.
Deep on it.
Yeah.
So had Sonar and made like weird trance music. Mark, if you're listening, I hope I'm not saying it the wrong way. Like, whatever. He was making kind of like I don't know. I just remember he had like a really weird Aphex Twin poster in his room and like was just making like weird stuff. And I think he played like he DJed in San Francisco at these strange clubs and things. But he had sonar and he had a microphone. So we made a song, just kind of like a joke, like whatever song. And I was like, I was also learning to code at the time. So I like built this website.
Very
and like
nerdy.
Very nerdy. Whatever. Built this website and then like had this song. And it was very strange that I did that. But it was, there was something about it that I was like, I just liked
it. It felt good.
It felt good and I liked it. So we did a couple more things just because he had the ability to record. And then I came home for the summer to Chicago and I was working in a kitchen. And yeah, I bought a MIDI controller. And
what a go-getter.
Yeah, man. And I got a 58 and I started learning to, I just was teaching myself to program and then started doing that and started just recording myself and writing legitimately horrible songs. And it's funny because one of my best friends, Tina, shout out Tina.
we're going shout out heavy.
But honestly, yeah, Tina is one of the... Tina and Lauren are like my two...
I was actually going to make a joke about the name Tina. I was going to go like, oh, Christine, do you ever go by Tina? Or do you, you know, Chrissy, Tina?
No.
I would call you Tina, I think, but now that you have a Tina,
yeah, don't,
I won't
because
do
it's very confusing.
All right.
Tina's real name is Christina, but like I call her Tina, and a lot of people call her Christina.
Okay, so Tina.
It's Tina.
Here's the songs. Or
this is just a funny aside, is that like a long time ago, we were reminiscing about, we were like sitting on my bed and like I was playing one of my new songs for her. And we were both like, this is fucking awesome. It's one of the worst songs. We look back at this now just like, what was going through our minds?
Oh, man.
You know.
Those are the best. But I mean, they're so bad. I have this one song sitting on my hard drive that was one of the first, it was one of the first two songs that the producer I still work with to this day that he and I recorded together probably 12, 13 years ago. And I listened to it. And at the time we were like, oh my fucking God, dude, we're going to be famous. Like, can you believe this shit that we make together? We're going to be famous. And now I listen to it. I'm like, oh my God, thank God this is not on the internet anywhere. You know?
Yeah. That's a similar conversation that we just had. But, so yeah, then I started making songs. Then I started playing on campus. Yeah. I had never like performed music or acted or like done stage things. And so I started doing that. And then I would, I was playing a lot of frat parties.
There's a certain, when you begin, there's a certain like innocent hubris that you have where you're like, I'm fucking dope. I need to start performing. And realistically, when you look back, you're like, I shouldn't have been performing back then. But thankfully you get your chops up doing that stuff.
And I didn't even think I was good. I was just so, I think what has, and this has been a realization for me, for a lot of my life, and it continues to this day, there's some disconnect between my inner life and my understanding of how other people perceive me.
Right. You believe in yourself, like, regardless of what other people might believe in.
Yeah, and my assumption is always, like...
People think I'm dope.
Or not even, like, people think I'm dope. Like, just that, like... What I'm doing is like legitimate in its own right, and I'm gonna do it. And even if I don't know all the answers, I'm gonna like express, you know, my attempts at approximating
that.
Them or something.
I feel that totally, 100%. Yeah.
So
it makes sense.
So yeah, I started doing that, but I was still very like focused on school, and that was kind of the number one.
But did you, how far into it before you like told mom and Tom, like, oh, guess what? I've been rapping.
Oh, I told him right away. I talk to my mom every day.
Yeah.
So like, you know. I have fine my friends with my mom. She probably knows I'm here right now.
Yeah.
I mean, not like, maybe she thinks I'm
I hope
being
that she,
killed
I,
in this
yeah,
apartment.
Yeah, I'm saying,
building.
I hope like you gave her the address and everything just in case. You don't know me and Ben. We
That's
crazy.
True. That's true. Kidding. You guys don't seem crazy.
Yeah, well, because I remember like my origin story is very similar to yours, just in a shittier school. You know what I mean? Like mine was at Cal Poly Pomona, and I was like, and I remember like going out into the hallway with the phone and being like, talking to my mom and dad, like, yeah, guess what? I've been like recording raps and they're like pretty dope. You know, I think I'm going to be a rapper. They're like, what? Stay in school, motherfucker. Like,
that's awesome. Yeah. So I just, you know, it was very gradual for me. Like, yeah. I never, I just kind of started doing it, and I was enjoying it. And then I finished school, and
what did you major in?
I was a double major in psychology and sociology.
Oh,
so social sciences with a little bit of an emphasis on the quantitative statistical side on the for psychology.
Nice.
So that was, you know, which I find very interesting.
You
and
know,
actually,
they always say like people that major in psychology or become psychologists because they're trying to like figure out what's wrong with them. Yeah.
I believe that. I think for me, I actually found sociology to I enjoyed more than psychology.
If I would have not gone to art school, I would have majored in sociology. Like that's my favorite thing to like read about in my free time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's kind of funny because it just means like the study of people, but
but it's so statistical.
But people are interesting.
People are hella interesting. But and I just like to – I like the fact that there's like a lot of numbers worked into it because it's – I don't know. It's like psychological math or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
No, it is.
Yeah.
And now my sister, mm-hmm. Lauren – shout out to Lauren.
What up, Lauren?
What up, Lauren? I don't know if – she might listen to – she might make it this far through this.
What if I
– my sister's very – she's patient – my sister has like a lot of very good qualities. Like she's like a solid person. And I'm not – she didn't pay me to say this. But she really is.
She should be.
Like you can like count on her.
What if I go through before I post this, listen to the conversation, like write down all the shout outs and tag their Twitters or Facebooks in the description.
And then we'll send them something. Ooh. But a lot of the people I'm shouting out in – particularly my deceased grandmother do not have Twitter.
Your grandmother's
accounts.
Not on Twitter?
She died in 2000 or something.
I'm just kidding.
No, not in 2000. In 2003.
You know what that means. We got to make your grandmother a parody account.
She would have been great at Twitter.
I'm sure.
Seriously, she would have been hilarious. But anyway, my point is my sister has elements of sociological quantitative analysis in her current job. She works for the government. She works for the Department of Health and Human Services.
So she's the feds.
I wouldn't call her the feds.
Hey, Lauren, if you're listening, stop snitching. So how long was it that you're making your dorm room music before you start garnering a little following? And was it around Stanford first, or was it because of like the MySpace era, like the internet started hearing about it?
It was – I mean, I had a little like very small following at school, just like campus stuff. But it wasn't until I finished school I – moved. Well, I was living in Palo Alto for a little bit, and then I moved to San Francisco. And actually, two of my best friends from high school moved out, and we had a little tripod. Those are some of the best years of my life.
Absolutely.
Very, very free time, unencumbered. But that's when I started playing shows, like in venues.
And that's when you probably started drinking.
It is when I started drinking.
How was your first beer? Or what was your first drink?
Well, so I should say I had like a glass of – I had a little bit of champagne at someone's 21st birthday. When I say like I didn't drink until I was 23, I didn't like feel the effects of alcohol until that time. So I do remember very distinctly like – because when I started drinking, it wasn't like I'm going to blah, blah. It was like I'm going to have a beer.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I remember going to – Zachary's Pizza in Oakland, which if you are from the Bay Area, you know Zachary's Pizza. It's very delicious. It's actually Chicago-style pizza. I was at the Zachary's in Rockridge with two of my friends, and we got pizza. And I was like, I'll have a Corona. And I just had a beer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very –
and it was fiesta time.
And that was pretty much it. Like.
Yeah.
You know, I think I definitely like put my feet in the water. I didn't go crazy and I wasn't, and I've never really been interested in other kinds of like drugs or substances really. I've smoked weed, of course, but as we were talking about earlier, I don't really love it.
Yeah.
I was sort of perplexed by the feeling for a little bit, the feeling of being stoned for maybe about a year or two. But then I stopped being perplexed and I just kept forgetting like stuff when people would tell me stories and if I was high, and my greatest fear is losing my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So
tell me about it.
Or like becoming crazy
I meant it's just like the rhetorical, like tell me about it. That same fear. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, we were talking earlier, but like any kind of like degenerative Alzheimer's thing, like it's just so scary.
Yeah.
So weed, marijuana makes me feel that way.
Yeah.
And it scares me and it makes me sad and upset. So.
Did you ever try any psychotropics? Did you ever try like acid or mushrooms?
I haven't tried acid or mushrooms. I'm again afraid.
Yeah.
Of like what that may unlock.
Yeah. Oh, it does some shit.
I've had a lot of friends who've had, you know,
you aren't the same when you come out the other side.
who've had very positive experiences. And, yeah. But I'm just like, I don't know. For me, it's just something like I don't feel super curious about.
Yeah, that's good. That's solid.
You know, like I don't really do anything that I don't want to do. So, and I'm not against it. I just like don't really want to do it. Just like I don't want to do cocaine. Mainly because, like, I fucking hate people.
You're already a talker.
Exactly. Can you imagine me on?
You don't need any cocaine for that.
No, I mean, coffee's bad enough. I'm all like, you know.
Yeah.
I had a matcha green tea before I came.
That was our. Oh, really?
Yeah. Love that.
Yeah, yeah.
So good.
That was our tangent from you started playing shows.
I started playing shows.
This is why we've already got an hour 20, because we're just like...
I hope people aren't bored.
No, this is how all my episodes are. I love this. Okay. I don't. You know, here's the thing about... Here's a little secret about Kinda Neat. Okay, secret. I don't know how many people listen, and I don't really give a shit if they have a good time listening. I do this part right here. Mm-hmm. I don't really make any money off this part. I just like doing it. And so this is a very enjoyable.
Okay.
This is a good one for me, so I'm down.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Now you know. Now you know my secret.
I feel blessed.
Blessings on blessings on blessings. So you start playing shows around.
Start playing shows.
When do you feel like it's catching on, you know?
Well, I feel like... I felt like it was catching on pretty much when I did I was starting to... use samples as a way to practice my production and get better at that, because I was finding it, you know, easier to start with some kind of source material, like something, and then build around that. And so I had, you know, that Grizzly Bear song, 2 Weeks?
I did a rap over that.
Okay.
That, yeah.
So that has been a widely, obviously, it's a great sounding piano.
Everyone has. Yeah.
Everyone's done something.
It's great.
So... I did something with that, a song called 2 Week, little play on words for you.
I used to do these projects called I Ruin These Songs For You. I did two of them, and I would just gather a bunch of songs that had like an 80-ish or 85-ish tempo, like BPM, and then had also a part that was long enough to like chop into a verse, and then I would just insert a verse of mine into the song that sounded as though I had collaborated with them. So it was like my 2 weeks version is like just an addition of lyrics that fits their thematology.
Got
you feel me?
Yeah. Okay. That's pretty cool.
It ended up in NME. Like it did good.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It was crazy. Anyway, sorry. I'm stealing your story.
You're not stealing my story.
So you sampled 2 weeks.
So whatever. Yeah. I had the song that like did well on the internet.
Yeah.
And it was just when I had begun to work with my manager.
So that had to be like in 2009 or 2010.
This was 2010.
Yeah, yeah.
This was in 2010.
Yeah.
And I believe... It must have been. And so Seth, who's my manager, was then and is now and is also awesome. He and I had just begun working together, and this song was like doing very well. And this was kind of like at a time when Hype Machine was not like at its apex, but it was.
That's why mine got caught on was because of Hype Machine. Same thing.
Exactly. So, and then I ended up doing some more things. I got a publishing deal. I got a record deal. And I think that was when I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, those...
Here I am.
See, that's a side of the story I never got to experience. I never really fucked with management, and so I never had anyone speaking on my behalf. So how does it go from, like, you got a hot song to, like, okay, now you have a deal?
Well, it's a strange process, and I think it's, you know, it's different for everybody. But personally, how it went was... So yeah, I had this song, and then typically a lot of the kind of like assistants to A&Rs or young A&Rs at labels, especially at that time, like 2010 to 2012, I would say, were really like looking at what was on Hype Machine for a long time.
Yeah, that was like SoundCloud kind of at that point.
Exactly. And like that was before they changed the algorithm in certain ways, like to kind of limit how long you could be up there. But back then it wasn't really like that. So you could be up like at the top of the charts for quite some time. And so Seth just started getting hit up. And then I had started taking some meetings and then got a couple people like who are in the industry who heard it and became advocates for me. And they opened up a lot of doors in terms of introducing me to people, like introducing me to who was then and continues to be my lawyer and, you know, just like different components of the team. And those relationships in turn led to opportunities, basically.
You found your Horace Grant and your Steve Kerr.
Exactly. That's very true. Although, you know, it's been cool because a lot of the original people have remained the same. Like, a few people have changed, but it's been very, very cool. Like, I was even with my my agent, my international agent, because I was just doing some bunch of shows in Europe, and we were hanging out. We're like, man, like, you've been, like, here since day one. And it's cool just, you know, across, like, 4 or 5 years having those relationships withstand, because I was originally signed to RCA and then to Sony ATV. So kind of all major label system record and publishing deals, and then ended up getting out of both of those deals, putting out my last record independently and operating in that sphere, and then kind of, you know, entering like a new phase now. But yeah, weathering all of that. I wouldn't call them storms, but just weathering like the change.
Yeah.
And having the same people like
be there for you throughout your growth.
It's so cool because it gives everybody a sense of, I think, accomplishment and happiness.
Right.
When, as like I begin to understand, because I got signed when I didn't know any, like I look back and I'm just like.
That's kind of being thrown to the wolves a little bit.
It was crazy. You know, I had gone from making songs truly in my mom and Tom's basement in Oakland. And then it was like the first session I had was with Pharrell. They flew me to Miami.
Wow.
You know, I signed my record deal with RCA in Miami, like in the lounge of the studio.
Yeah.
And like went to this crazy dinner that night, like super expensive, like the most expensive dinner I'd ever been to. And I came back to the hotel and I just barfed. Like I was just like.
From nerves?
Yeah. Wow. Like it was just, it was not the right.
Yeah.
You know, I was just like not ready for that. And I think that's one comment and criticism I have a little bit of the major label system is that it has a purpose and it has a real role and it has so many strengths.
Yeah.
But it's not very good with developing artists who don't have a vision for quite yet for their voice.
Right, right.
And which I didn't.
Because if you're not you're there to pump out radio hits kind of, right?
Well, it to some extent definitely.
Yeah.
But to the more minimal extent, you're there to represent something that people can explain. And like
an elevator pitch.
Yeah. And like for me at the time, you know, it was just very, very confusing. And I didn't even know what I wanted.
Right. Right. Well, so look, we've been going a long time already and I have like. Mm-hmm. Literally a million questions about that part of your life, because I'm sure that the last 4 or 5 years of your life have you've probably had as much experience in those 4 or 5 years as the equivalent of 10 years of other parts of your life. So why don't we call this a stopping point and just go, we'll have you back on because this was dope. And I think like
this is a pause.
This is just a pause. When it makes sense for you to come back, we'll come back. And you know, I've done 3 episodes with my mom already, and I'm very good at remembering where we left off.
Okay,
so,
me too.
So I know that next time it makes sense for you to come in, if you have something to promote or if you just have a hankering to have a conversation, I want to ask you all about your label experience, because that seems extremely interesting, and that's probably what people were expecting us to talk about for most of the time, and we skipped right around all that. We spent too much time on shout outs.
We did, but yeah, I would love a part 2.
Yeah.
And I will just say as like a teaser to the part 2.
Give me the teaser.
The teaser is that there are a lot of like changes and things that have happened in the last 4 months for me, all extremely positive, right, that I'm super excited about and very happy to share the news. And in fact, if we talk in a little bit, I'll even have more like...
I don't know if it'll be a little bit. If you want to reveal stuff right now, do it.
No, we'll just leave everybody on the...
Okay.
I mean, it's nothing that crazy. I'm not like pregnant or something. Yeah, no.
Not yet.
Not yet. But remember, I am looking for an actor.
I'm just saying, I'm going to audition.
Just saying.
I got auditions coming up.
Lee's got auditions coming.
That's terrible.
But yeah, so it's good, and I'm excited to like...
Are you talking about any projects coming out? Like, is that a thing that you're... Are you telling people that you have stuff coming out?
Because if not, don't. Yeah. There is new music coming out.
Yeah.
The form isn't totally like revealed yet.
Yeah,
but
so let's not reveal it.
I'll say this, though. I'm like more excited about this kind of like next body of work and everything that I'm putting into it. More excited than I have been in a really, really long time.
That's great.
I've been, you know, proud of a lot of the things I've put out. So this is just feels really good. And yeah.
I feel like you're about to have a big, this time of your life is going to be very creative and it's going to be very good. And you're going to have a big influx of following, I bet. Like, I don't know. Like when you get out of one deal and into a new one and you're right at the right age to be like peak artistry, yeah, like it's going to be, good things are going to happen, Christine.
I hope so. Well, Lee, thank you.
You're welcome.
And thanks to anyone who fucking made it to the end.
Hell yeah.
Okay. I've got a great idea.
Yes.
If you make it to the end of this podcast, tweet at me. Word Newcastle. Okay. Yeah. So if you've made it this far into the podcast, tweet the word Newcastle to me. And my Twitter handle is just Kfly, KFLAY.
At KFLAY.
Newcastle.
Newcastle.
Actually, please tweet code word Newcastle.
And then what's going to happen?
You don't fucking know, man.
She's going to DM you something.
I'm going to DM you.
A new dad joke that she just wrote.
Yes.
A new dad joke.
Free joke if you do that.
All right.
I'm very curious to see. That's a kind of a barometer of listenership.
It is. I don't have to get into all that, but activation is tough with a podcast. You never really know. And iTunes doesn't tell you. They just don't tell you.
I know. That's so...
It's crazy.
It's wrong.
At Kflay. What else? Facebook? Anything? Like, you're just Kflay across the board.
Yeah, just search that.
Kflay is pretty SEO friendly, I think.
If you can't figure it out by just typing in Kflay into the Google bar... Yeah. Yeah,
you definitely didn't go to Stanford.
Got bigger fish to fry.
Well, thank you so much. This was really fun. You're very smart and intelligent. Like I'm just reading out of a thesaurus. No, this was just a good conversation. You're a good bullshitter. Okay, guys. You know what part of the show this is. This is the part where I say, my name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition. You can follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. Follow my man behind the boards, Ben Shim, making the shit sound buttery at I Am Database, based with two S's. Follow us as a unit at Kinda Neat. YouTube.com/KindaNeat, where you are going to see Kflay perform FML, right?
Yeet.
I remembered that
you
from
did.
A text message.
That
okay.
was good.
Thank you. So you're going to see Kflay perform FML. Go to your app store, search for the podcast app, search for Kinda Neat, download it, or I don't know fucking what I'm talking about. Subscribe, whatever. Subscribe to Kinda Neat on iTunes. It helps us. Leave a comment. Leave a 5-star rating. Tell us who you want to see on the show next. Thank you so much for that. If you are a loyal listener, you know the deal. You haven't done it yet. I know you haven't done it yet, but you can do it today. Go to patreon.com/kindaneat and donate $1 per episode. It's not a donation, actually. It's a pledge. Pledge $1 per episode. That's $4 a month because we release 4 episodes a month. It's like buying me a coffee. Just be a nice person. If it's part of your weekly habit, just do it. No big deal. I know you haven't done it yet. Today's the day you can do it. That being said, I think we got the job done.
I feel that we're owed money because we did the job.
I already bought you a beer. What else do you want, woman?
No, I'm just kidding. A lot.
That was Christine Kflay. My name is Lee Intuition. This was, goddamn it, Kinda Neat.
We did it.
Mm-hmm.